Welcome, Brian Noonan on 720 WGN, here until 7 o'clock from the Allstate Skyline Studio, high above the Chicago skyline. The beautiful lake to my back, the reflection of the Suisse Hotel in my vision. I can barely see Cody due to the reflection, but it's all going to work out wonderfully. A big show planned for this afternoon. Always more fun, though, when you are involved. 312-981-7200. That is the phone number. That is also the text number. Wow, how handy is that? You only have to remember one number. 312-981-7200. When you call in, you'll be talking to Cody. Man, it's Sunday already. Goff, he is the executive producer from Rockford, Illinois. If you're nice to him, you get to me. And if you want to talk to us via social media, sure, we're hip. All the kids are on the social media. It's Facebook and Twitter. You can get us at Brian Noonan Show on those. After 5 o'clock, our good friend Michael Osaki from Baseball in the Attic is going to be here. The All-Star break begins officially tomorrow. And so Michael comes in and he talks about sports memorabilia. Do you have some of it laying around? Maybe you have some old baseball cards, a signed baseball. Maybe you have a pennant, a jersey. Whatever you have, Michael can tell you if it's worth something or if it's, you know, just a nice memory that maybe you should hang on to, or it's completely worthless and you can, you know, you let it go. You're not going to lose anything. So Michael will be here after 5 o'clock taking your calls about your pieces of memorabilia. Then we will talk after 6 o'clock about the decline in summer jobs for teenagers and a protest at the Fox Valley Mall yesterday by angry moms. So much to get to, and then a couple fun stories hopefully thrown in. That's our goal on a Sunday afternoon, is always to throw in some fun stuff. But we have to start with this. You heard Pam reporting on this in the newscast. Yesterday on the south side, there was another officer-involved shooting. A man was killed, and that led to protests between police and demonstrators on the south side last night. So the shooting happened about 5:30 on 71st Street. Harith Augustus was 37 years old. He was the man that was killed by the police officers. Now, Eddie Johnson had said, the superintendent had said, he would be releasing the body cam video. Of course, this morning, protesters were saying, well, where's the video? Well, the video has been released. And if you're looking for it, if you go to the front page of the ChicagoTribune.com, their website, Chicago Tribune's website, ChicagoTribune.com, the video is right there. Now, I've watched this video several times myself. Cody, Pam, and I watched it frame by frame to try to go over it. And once again, you know, there were all these demonstrations yesterday, which, you know, people always have the right to demonstrate. What started the demonstrations, not only another shooting, but the fact that the initial reports were that the victim was unarmed and was shot by police, that is unbelievably false. It was false. It was false when it was first reported. The police tried to point that out last night. And now watching the video, there is absolutely no question that Mr. Augustus was armed. He not only had a weapon on his belt on his right side, he also appeared to have two magazines of ammunition on his belt on his left side. The video clearly shows, begins with an officer and we were trying to figure out, because again, one of the big topics or talking points was that it was white officers shooting a black citizen. And it's very hard to tell from the video the race of the officer that was initially talking to Mr. Augustus when the video begins. He's talking to an officer. It appears he has something in his hand that later turns out to be, they show close, it later turns out to be his wallet. He's showing his ID. As he is talking to this officer, two other officers, it appears to be a male and female officer, approach from behind, both white. The female officer goes to Mr. Augustus's right side, at which point he begins to spin. He spins away from the officers, and as he goes backward toward the car, we see his wallet with his ID in it, and then he spins a little more, his shirt rises up, and we clearly see a pistol, again, on his belt on the right side, and at least one, it appears to be two magazines of ammunition on the left side. He spins back toward the hood of a car, goes out into the street, where this is where the decision is made that you can't walk back from. Goes out into the street. His right hand goes to his, as he begins to run into the street, his right hand is going toward his belt. As he gets into the street, his right hand is clearly on the position of his belt where the gun, where we just saw the gun. There's no question about it. He spins, his hand is still there. It appears he may be falling backwards, but he remains upright the whole time. His hand, again, right where the gun was situated, his elbow begins to come up. All right. I'm watching this now. Granted, I am a civilian, but I also know how police officers are trained. They've already identified that this suspect has a weapon. He now appears, until he is out of the picture after apparently being shot, he appears to be going for and pulling that gun. At the 29-second spot of this video, his elbow is fully up. His hand has cleared his belt. Unfortunately, you can't tell if his hand has cleared his belt empty or if his hand has cleared his belt with the weapon in his hand. So, you know, we can't tell from the video. But as I look, this was not unjustified. These police officers, one, did not shoot an unarmed man. Two, they stopped him because they said he exhibited signs of someone who was carrying a weapon. That turns out to be true. He did have a weapon. And it also looks like he was well ready to pull it. Now, if you're a police officer and you're in that situation, do you wait and see? You've already identified the gun. It isn't like one of these horrible mistakes, misjudgments, miscalculations where somebody gets shot because they have a phone, which was one of the initial reports too. It was first we heard that the suspect was unarmed, then we heard that he had a phone. Now it turns out what was in his hand initially was his wallet and ID. So they didn't make a mistake about what he had. The officers knew he had a weapon. If we go by the video, and I know in the past we've talked about all these viral videos, we talk about them all the time, that you never really know what's going on before the video starts. But here it seems pretty clear. Again, if you go to ChicagoTribune.com, it's right there on the front page. You can watch the video, and you see what happens. It's tragic. It's a tragic loss of life. It's a tragic mistake on Mr. Augustus's part. It goes to the fact, and we were talking about this before, it goes to the fact that how horrible it is that you feel you live in an area or you live in a time where you have to go out armed. But it also comes back to the point where, you know, I know people will say, well, listen, you're a white guy. You're a middle-aged white guy. How much trouble do you have with the police? You don't understand the neighborhood. You don't understand the environment. All right, I'll grant you that. But in this day and age, with all that's happening, if you don't know enough when you are approached by the police to cooperate, to let them know that you have a gun on you, to do anything they say, bad things are going to happen. And bad things happened. And it was tragic. Tragic. You know, but... And now people are texting in that, you know, he got shot because he was black. That would have happened. I believe this would have happened to anybody in this situation. If you had been stopped, you tried to run from the police, they know you have a gun, and you reach for the gun, which is clearly shown on this video, you're getting shot. It happens. It seems to happen a lot more in certain neighborhoods. It seems, you know, we see this happen in the with black men a lot. But where does the responsibility lie with the person? You know, there's cops who make mistakes. There's a lot of wonderful police officers doing work that most of us would never want to do. And they have every right to go home at the end of the night too. So to say, well, they should have waited to make sure that he was really pulling it, and if he pulled it, was he going to point it out? You don't have that kind of luxury. And I would put it to any of us in that situation, we wouldn't have that luxury either. So we can't expect a police officer who's been trained in the use of deadly force when their lives or the lives of somebody else are in danger or threatened, we can't expect them to take that time and say, well, I wasn't really sure what was going to go on. So I waited, and then my partner got shot. Do officers make mistakes? Sure. Do some overstep? Sure. But I want you to watch this video first. I want you to watch the video before you call, because I want to hear your thoughts on it. But watch the video, because this isn't like the Laquan McDonald video where you watched it and went, oh, man, these cops aren't really telling the truth. I didn't see anybody lunge. I didn't see this. I didn't see that, which are all fair, and I agree. But you watch this video, and I don't know. I don't know how you could say, well, you know, this was the police overstepped here. It sure doesn't look like it. 312-981-7200. If you want to jump in, make sure if you want to, like I said, take a minute, go to ChicagoTribune.com, watch the video, or watch the video wherever you can find it. But I know for a fact it's right there on the front page of the Tribune's website. We've watched it numerous times. As I said, we watched it frame by frame. But I want to know what you think. 312-981-7200. Can we? Is it dangerous for us? And yes, it is. To always jump to the fact that the police have made a mistake. And some people will do that. And some people will automatically believe that the person who was shot was wrong. I think we got to look case by case, and this case seems pretty cut and dry to me. 312-981-7200. I'll talk to you after this, WGN. Talking about the body cam footage that was released following the police shooting of Harith Augustus, 37-year-old man from Chicago's South Side. Yesterday, he was pronounced dead at Jackson Park Hospital. The body cam video was released this afternoon. Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson had said it would be released. It has been released. The shooting last night led to a protest that ran long into the evening. There were more protests promised today, but we will see how that goes. We don't have any reports yet of any more protests today. Watch the video before you comment. 312-981-7200. And if you start, if you're texting in, just saying this is fake news, there's a good chance I'm not going to address your texts. Because if you want to have a conversation, that's fine. If you're going to resort to this is all fake, it's not fake. There's the video. Go watch the video. I believe in this case, the officers were absolutely justified in what happened. It was tragic. There's no good reason for a loss of life. And yes, there is, in the black community, there has been historic distrust among the community and the police, sometimes for very good reason. Now, I know Superintendent Johnson has been working hard. The department is a long way from being fixed, but steps are being taken to try to do the right thing. And at some point, you have to take responsibility as an individual. And if you are approached, you need to comply, especially if you're carrying a gun. If you are carrying a gun, you need to comply. If you make once the officers have identified that you are carrying a weapon and you make the move to pull that weapon, I'm sorry, that's the way it goes. It's horrible, but that's what happens. Steven's in Michigan. Hi, Steven. Welcome to WGN.
Hey, yes, I was just wanting to point out something that I see all the time, and whenever I have watched an episode of Cops, all you have to do is watch one or two episodes, and it's replete with example after another of Caucasian men running from the cops, going in their pocket, trying to throw their drugs away or whatever. The cop doesn't know why they're going in their pocket. They always tackle him down and put handcuffs on him. Footage after footage after footage. But for some reason, when it's a black man, the instinct is to shoot.
Well, Stephen,
which is fine, because I know they're trained to do that.
Well, it's never fine.
They don't have time to wait and see if he's got a gun. I get that. And the responsibility does lay on the person who is carrying the gun. You need to say, hey, put your hands up and say, hey, I have a concealed carry or whatever. I do have a gun, and stop. But there are replete examples of Caucasian men being wrestled to the ground after they're going in their pockets. If you just watch one episode of Cops,
well, sure,
for 5 minutes.
I've seen Cops, and I've seen it. Have you seen this video, Stephen?
You know, I have not.
Okay, well, this gentleman, Mr. Augustus, was not in anybody's tackling range. They had tried to hold on to him, make physical custody of him. He spun away. He was in the middle of the street when he was shot. He was in the middle of the street when he appeared to pull the gun. Once that gun's coming out, it's different than if you're running after somebody and they're in their pocket and you catch them and tackle them. If somebody's in the middle of the street and goes to pull a gun and you're a police officer, your duty is to stay alive and protect everybody else who's around who might get shot. So it's
absolutely,
you know,
that point is very true, but at the same time there have been other examples of footage where obviously this person had a gun, so it's
Stephen, we know, and there are a lot of examples, and we've seen the videos, and thank you for the call, of officers who have done the wrong thing and who have shot unarmed men, and most of the videos we see, unfortunately, unarmed black men. And that is a systematic problem that needs to continue to be addressed and should be addressed. And no, I'm not a black man living in that community. And yes, my experiences with the police are different. But come on, in this day and age, I don't care who you are, you need to know this is the climate and you need to protect yourself. And you need to let them know. And while I don't know what was going through Mr. Augustus's mind when he was approached by the first officer. I don't know what was going through the officer's mind when they said he appeared to exhibit behavior of someone who was carrying a gun. Turns out that was what happened. We don't know what was going through their mind. The officer is on desk duty. I'm sure we will hear more about that as time goes forward. But, I don't know. It's just horrible. But I'm not going to bash the cops when they don't deserve it. And I'm not going to say that people should demonstrate something that doesn't need to be demonstrated. What you need to do in this particular instance is to grieve for the loss of a life. And then again, let's look at the symptoms, or let's look at the underlying problem that necessitates a man feeling he needs to carry a gun to go to the barbershop where he works. You know, from all reports, very quiet guy, kept to himself, didn't talk to anybody really at the barbershop until they would talk to him. He was supposedly going out to get some cigarettes and change to go to a bachelor party last night. He was gonna go out and have a good time. Then something happens. For some reason, he catches the eye of a police officer. The police officer approaches him, and then things go horrible. From the 773, I've watched the video over and over. There was no doubt in my mind he was going for a gun. It was either the guy or the officer that would die. In this case, the officer was 100% justified in what he did. Yeah, and listen, if you think it was easy for any police officer to shoot somebody, you're wrong. I've talked to enough police officers here, and I've talked to police officers in private. They never want to do that. If a cop can go his whole career and never pull his gun, they are very, very happy. But come on. Now, somebody texting in, fire that cop. No! You don't fire a cop for something justified. Now, when I've seen videos of cops who were obviously wrong, I've said it. I've called them out. But in this case, watching this video, and that's what we go by. That's how we make our decisions, right? That's how the court of public opinion works. We scream for these body cams. We want the body cam video because, some of us are hoping that it will show the police doing the wrong thing. Well, we've got to take it the other way too. Yes, it's going to show misbehavior. But it is also going to show cops doing exactly what they are supposed to do. And in this case, it did. Now, the viral video, did you see the viral video of the two cops in, I think it was Georgia, flipping a coin to decide if they were going to write a ticket or arrest somebody for reckless driving? This woman was driving like a lunatic. And these two cops are laughing, flipping a coin to decide. That's a body cam or a dashboard cam catching the cop doing exactly the wrong thing. And that's why we need the body cams. But we also need the body cams to show when the police are doing the exact right thing. And as tragic as a loss of life always is, I believe these cops have done the right thing. And it's, you know, there's nothing we can do about it. You know, you can argue all day, well, the people in this community do not trust the police. That's neither here nor there. If you are approached, you need to do what you're told. Does that mean something horrible is still not going to happen? No, absolutely not. It doesn't guarantee that. Because we know that while the vast majority of the police do a great job, there are going to be some who bring whatever bigotry or biases they have to the job. But that's, then we, you know, we shine a light on that. We weed them out. They are gone. Then we move on. Do we have another break before the news, Cody? No, we are going, all right, good. All right, well, there's that. And to our texter from the 312 who keeps calling me fake news. I don't know how you, Cody, not you, we only have a minute, but when you watch it, you had a clinical term for this. When people watch a video and they still will not believe what the video shows. What is that term? Do you remember that term? Do you remember how to turn the mic on in the new studio? You're in a new, Cody's in a new room. And, hold on. Let me see if maybe I don't have you up. That's all right. We'll figure it out. You can tell us later. I have no idea. That this board is not the same as the board in the other room. All right. Well, there is a psychological phenomenon that makes people not believe something that is right before their eyes because they do not want to believe it. So they just don't. They just move on. All right, on the other side of the news, our friend Michael Osaki from Baseball in the Attic is going to join us. Do you have some sports memorabilia laying around? Do you have autographed baseballs? Do you have Joe Namath's knee pad from 1968? What do you got? Michael has. Michael can tell you if it's worth anything or if it's just nothing. All right, so we'll do that on the other side. We're also going to figure out how Cody can be part of the show.
I figured it out.
Deal. There you go.
Yeah.
And too late, because now we have to go to the news.
Aww.
The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet. Weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. It is 5 o'clock with the news, Pam Jones. Now, let's turn our attention to sports, because the All-Star Game, the halfway point of the season, is here. If you listen to the White Sox big winners today over the Royals. That was very exciting. You heard Ed Farmer say that they are determined to play better baseball in the second half. The rebuild is underway, so we're hoping that, you know, from Ed Farmer's mouth to the White Sox ears, that will be the better half for the, you know, second half will be better for the first. But the point is, the All-Star break is here, so we have some time when there's no baseball games where we can start cleaning out our closets, we can clean out our attics, our garages, and maybe our man caves, and think, oh boy, look at this, I have an autographed baseball, or I have a boxing glove signed by Butterbean. I wonder what that might be worth. Who could I turn to? Well, thankfully, our good friend Michael Osaki from Baseball in the Attic is here. He comes in periodically, and we talk about baseball and sports memorabilia. 312-981-7200. If you have a piece of memorabilia that you would like Michael's opinion on, by all means, please let us know. Hi, Michael. How are you? Good to see you. You done breaking stuff?
Hey, Brian. It's just great to be here. This is a great new studio you have.
You like it?
Overlooking the entire lake. You got Navy Pier. All the yachts, it really is something special you have.
I don't know, my back is to it, but I do turn around and I can see people in the windows of the Suites Hotel. There's somebody doing their hair. From the other studio, we look right into people's apartments. It's a lot of fun. So it's, many different kinds of views from these new studios.
And I would agree, but the best part about the studio is that you still have Cody. He's here all the time.
Yes, Cody is here. Oh, you turned the lights on in there. He was working in the dark. I guess we could probably do that in here. We'll do it at the break. Maybe not. I like it dark. So, all right, this is a, first of all, I think the website, you had done, redone the website last time you were here, but the new website looks terrific, baseballintheattic.com. Again, for people who may not know you, because, you know, some people listen all the time, some don't. Give us your background. How did you become a certified sports memorabilia appraiser?
Back in 1997, when I started collecting, my grandfather got me a shoebox full of old baseball cards for my birthday. And at that time, I was in high school. I would go to the local hotels on the weekends. They had card shows.
Yeah.
They don't really have those anymore. And I would go up to a dealer who had, let's say, a Ricky Henderson rookie card. And I would say, why is this one $100 and this one is $200? Like, explain that to me. And they would talk about the condition, the corners, the centering, and all that impacted the value. And it kind of got me interested, and I got hooked. And it's kind of morphed into what it is today, where I'm a certified vintage sports memorabilia appraiser. I'm certified through ISA, International Society of Appraisers, which actually the headquarters is right here on Wacker Drive.
Oh, really?
About a block away. Yep.
Nice.
And they certify all different types of appraisers, gemologists, art, you name it. And I also do a lot of writing for Parade Magazine primarily. Most people are familiar with Parade on the Sunday paper.
Sure.
You get it in there. About 40 million people read that publication every week. And so I'm always on the road. I'm based here in Chicago, which I love. But I also love getting out and seeing people, seeing what they have, hearing the stories. Why someone still has that Babe Ruth baseball today? Why did your mother never throw out those baseball cards?
Well, that's the thing that since you and I have been talking on the radio, I'm fascinated by some of the stories that come by. And some of the things that people have called us and told us they have for whatever reasons. Maybe it was passed down. Maybe they got it in a raffle. Who knows? But there's always a story. It's rarely, yeah, I got a baseball. How'd you get it? I don't know. I was walking down the street. It fell out of a tree. Nobody had, you know, no. There's always some sort of personal story that goes with it.
Yes. And I will tell you, though, some people lie and tell me a crazy story.
Hold on. There's dishonest people?
Yeah.
I don't believe it.
Go figure. Yeah. So I have to be on the lookout for that, too.
Well, that's one of the, you know, we hear these stories all the time of law enforcement cracking down. They found, you know, not only counterfeit athletic wear, but fake, you know, fake memorabilia, things that are signed. Everybody's, you know, there's frauds. What's one telltale thing, and you've been appraising for a long time, so I'm sure you've come across some frauds. What's one thing that jumps out that you've seen a couple times where you go, as soon as I see this, I know there's a good chance this is sketchy?
Yeah, so let's talk about Babe Ruth and his signature. He died in 1948. And when you look at an official baseball, the commissioner is always stamped on it, right? It could be Bud Selig, or in this particular case in 2018, Rob Manfred. But in the 70s, it was Charles Feeney. And one time I saw a Babe Ruth signed baseball on a Feeney. It was on a Feeney baseball. And I said, it's impossible. He died in 48. This ball was manufactured in the 1970s. And then the guy would say, no, it's real. It was passed down to me. And no.
No. Can't possibly be. So this is obviously something that comes from thousands of hours of looking at stuff, right? This is not, because you show that to me and go, oh, okay, and I'd look and it's all the little details. And as smart as appraisers are, there's people out there who think they're smarter and are going to try to slide one past you. How stringent was the process to become a certified appraiser?
It's extremely stringent. And not just about your education, your background, and your skill set, but the interview process, interviewing people over many years who I've dealt with, who I've appraised things from. They look at, I also do a lot of speeches. I speak to different organizations. What's the information that I'm talking to people about? Is it accurate? So it's, of course, a credit check. I can't be a felon.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
Because they want to let you upstairs.
Right.
Cody has strict instructions, no felons.
Right. So, you know, it's a lot
convicted, not accused. You could be an accused felon.
Right.
Just not convicted.
But, you know, Brian, just over the course of 20 years, and as I'm thinking about this right now, talking, like, really, it started, you know,
that's a long
1997.
Time.
I can't believe it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. All right, we've got 312-981-7200. Michael Osaki's here. BaseballInTheAttic.com is his website. This is interesting because I don't think we've ever had a question like this. It comes from someone in the 630. I live in Geneva. I'm looking to get two autographs by Ted Williams and Joe DiMaggio authenticated. Any suggestions where that might happen? And what is something like that cost to get those authenticated?
Yeah, so let me first talk about Joe DiMaggio, Ted Williams, and Mickey Mantle. Those three from a top 10 forgery list are going to be in the top three.
Really? Now, why is that? Just the demand, or?
Well, there's always demand for them, but don't forget, they were frequent signers in the 80s and 90s. And so
at the shows and stuff, right?
Yeah, and there are a lot of authentic autographs, but because their autograph is worth a couple $100, there's people that are forging those autographs, and so there's a lot of bad ones out there. If you were to get that authenticated, it would cost about $75 to $100 for each signature.
Okay.
And it may or may not be worth it, because let's say Joe DiMaggio signed an 8x10 photo is $200, $225. Same for Ted Williams. With a baseball, you're looking at a little bit more money.
Now, how does one go? So I come in, if I have just a piece of paper with a signature, that's probably, you know, worth nothing, right? But how would you look at this signature on a piece of paper or a baseball or something, and what are the steps? How do you go about it? How do you go about figuring out if this is real? Now, like with the baseball one before, you said, okay, there was a clue because it was Babe Ruth. He was dead. Feeney's on the ball. That's easy. But if I've got something and the ball matches the time frame and it's got Mickey Mantle's name on it and it looks, you know, from all, you know, you look at it quick, you go, oh, yeah, that looks like Mickey Mantle's on it. How do you break it down to say, yes, this is legit, or no, sorry, you got sold a bill of goods?
Yep. So there are several things I would be looking for. The spacing in between the letters, the height of the letters, the slant and the tilt. You know, all these things go into making a determination if something is authentic or not.
Okay.
And then compare that information to what I would have in my database at home, which are exemplars that I know to be authentic. Granted, over time, your signature has changed, and so has mine.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not an exact science, but that really is the way to look at those different things, the height, the spacing, the slant.
So it's kind of like when the FBI says they use a handwriting analysis. You're basically doing the same thing.
Similar.
But figuring out if a sports signature is correct.
Similar, yeah.
312-981-7200 is the number if you have a question for Michael. Chuck does. He's near Midway. Hi, Chuck.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good. What do you got?
Yeah, so I call it a team ball because I got it personally all signed by as many of the, like, I think it was either 1990 or 91 Chicago White Sox players because my dad used to work security at the old Comiskey. So I used to go to games all the time, and the guys there knew me as a little kid, whatever. And the ball's got Frank Thomas signed right above Sammy Sosa, Robin Ventura, Bobby Thigpen, Jack McDowell. So I think it's either 90 or 91. I mean, Sosa, whatever you think about him, probably should be in the Hall of Fame. You know, Thomas is. Then you got Ventura, Thigpen, that for a time, you know, had the record for the most saves, and then Jack McDowell, a Cy Young winner. I never got it appraised or graded PSA or any or authenticized. I mean, I know it's legit because I was a kid and had them sign it, but I know that if I don't plan on getting rid of it.
So what do you think, Michael, when you got a lot of guys like that, and those are big name guys on that ball, that would seem like it's worth something?
The key signature is Frank Thomas, and that's good that it's on the ball. It's from the 90s. They did not win the World Series. You're looking at $125 to $150 tops.
Awesome.
All right. All right. Not bad.
Thanks.
All right, Chuck, thanks for the call. Do you have something sitting around the house? 312-981-7200. Michael Osaki, baseballintheattic.com is here. We will talk more about sports memorabilia and try to figure out if you have trash or treasure or just something with a great story that you should probably hang on to because, you know, nobody else is going to enjoy that story. We'll have more with Michael on the other side. It's WGN. Do you have some sports memorabilia lying about the house as we go into All-Star break? Maybe you've got some baseball cards that you got from somebody or you collected as a kid and you're wondering, maybe there's that one in there that will finance your kid's college education or help you retire. Maybe it'll just go in your kid's baseball or your kid's bike spokes and make a nice, cool motorcycle sound. Because everybody thinks their stuff is valuable, right, Michael? That's the big
always.
That's the big thing. Oh, this has got to be worth a fortune.
Mm-hmm.
And usually, What's the most expensive thing, or the highest value thing, I should say? Someone brought this to you and went, I'm not sure. Is this worth something? You went, yeah, it is.
Yeah, a couple of years ago on the East Coast, a couple brought me a 1915 complete Cracker Jack baseball card set. There were 176 cards in that set, and they were issued one by one into packages of Cracker Jacks.
Okay.
So you would go to the local five and dime store and get a package, and inside each one would be one Cracker Jack card. And this couple, I looked over the cards, and before I gave them the appraisal, I just said, you know, just out of curiosity, you know, what do you think this is worth? And they said, I don't know, maybe a couple $1,000. And I said, no. And they go, oh, maybe like $500? I go, no, about $80,000 or $85,000.
Really?
And they were like, both, like, they looked at each other and they were speechless and,
wow.
Yeah.
Now, okay. It's always, it's like when you're trying to sell something online. It's, you say it could be worth $80,000 to $85,000. Did someone pay that to that? Were they actually able to sell it for that? Or is it like, hey, this is nice, it's worth this, but will you ever be able to cash that in and, you know?
Yeah. So they told me that it's not for sale.
Okay.
But they did, you know, want to know what the value was.
Sure.
They've had it for quite a long time, and
that's very cool. Was that one of the most unique things too that you've ever seen?
Definitely. But I see so many different things across all sports. It sounds kind of weird, but like I'm almost like numb to it because I see you know, Babe Ruth signed. I just got a text message on the way here about a Babe Ruth signed baseball. You know, so it's like. Most people, like, that's like the holy grail, but, you know, I see Babe Ruth baseballs on a regular basis.
Yeah. Well, see, look at you. Now you're all jaded. Oh, another Babe Ruth ball? Boo-hoo. 312-981-7200. Do you have something? You want to know what it's worth? Let's see. Daniel's in Darien. Hi, Daniel. What do you got? Hello, Daniel.
No, the name is Frank.
Oh, I'm going to call you Daniel.
No, don't worry.
All right, Frank. Sorry, Frank's in Darien. Boy, I'm looking right at Cody. I could see if you called him Phil, because that sounds the initial sound is the same. But Frank and Daniel are nothing even close. Did you slur Frank when you talked to Cody? Did you?
No, I don't drink anymore.
Were you using your alias? All right. Well, listen, we're glad you're here, Frank. If that's your real name, I think it's Daniel. But what do you got?
I got a White Sox bobblehead now. Dated, it's either the 5th or 6th, either May or June, the 20th, 1973. Ooh. The White Sox bobblehead down, he's got red hair, blue hat, holding a bat in his right hand on the ground.
From 1973, that's an old one.
Yes, sir. My mother went to the game and she kept it.
Nice.
With bobbleheads, more so than anything else, Condition. They are very susceptible to chipping, paint loss. Depending upon condition, it can range anywhere from $20 to $75.
Okay.
Not bad.
It's no chips, no nothing on it. I was curious. I was born in Bridgeport. It's an old Sox fan anyways.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So it's worth a little money if you ever wanted to try to get rid of it.
No, hang on to it.
There you go, Frank.
Thanks
for calling. Take care. Let me ask you, now that's something that obviously given out at the game, the bobblehead. They didn't give out as many as they do now, right? So is stuff that you get at a game now, swag, whether it's a really cool Blackhawks bobblehead or Sox bobblehead or whatever, that's probably not worth hardly anything because so many are given out. Are the older ones maybe worth a little more just because there's fewer of them?
Yeah, so the stuff given out at the games today is essentially worthless. A lot of it looks nice, whether it's a towel or a bobblehead, but they give 10,000 or 20,000 of them out.
And they all have a sponsor on them.
Yeah, sponsored by Budweiser or something. I don't know if I can say that on air. But,
sure, why not?
But yeah, there's always some sort of sponsor.
Yeah, some sponsor.
The old ones are worth a little bit more value, but generally anything collectible or souvenir, it doesn't have a lot of value today.
It's not. All right. Barbara's been holding on. She is in Lincolnwood. Hi, Barbara. What do you got?
Hi, Brian. I've got two dolls. They're Sammy Sosa. They're in a case. They've never been opened. One, he's wearing a gray outfit.
Okay.
And the other one, he's wearing the blue shirt with the gray pants.
Now, were these given away at the game?
No.
Where do you get a Sammy Sosa?
I don't even remember where I got them. It says McFarland's sports picks.
Michael, have you ever seen these Sammy Sosa dolls?
2003 Chicago All-Star Game on the front.
Are they like Chucky dolls? Do they ever come alive and chase you around the house, Barbara?
No.
All right, that's good. Because that would make them worth more money, I'm guessing. Right, Michael?
Yes.
For sure.
So, Barbara, anything Sammy Sosa, whether it's a bobblehead or a doll or an autograph, anything, is really worthless. He still has not apologized to the Cubs for his steroid use, and he's banned from Wrigley Field, and there's nobody in the last 15 years that has ever asked me, hey, I'm looking to buy a Sammy Sosa anything. There's
really?
No demand.
No. I don't know.
I'm sorry.
Maybe let the dogs use them or something. I don't know.
I will. The dog will have fun.
Yeah, he'll have fun with it. So there's some worth to you, Barbara. You save a little money going to PetSmart or Petco, and you don't have to buy dogs.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Thanks, Barbara.
Thank you.
Now, I don't know if Steve Dale will approve of me telling people to give Sammy Sosa dolls to their dogs, but I'm not a pet expert. I'm just a guy trying to figure things out. All right. How about Grant Hill rookie cards from the 815? Grant Hill rookie. Now, you mentioned before, there's a lot of different things that go into judging the worth of a card, right?
Yeah. And Grant Hill was injured a lot during his NBA professional career. He was a great college standout. It really depends on condition. Anywhere from $10 to $1,000. I know I'm being vague there, but that really is the case.
Now, do other sports cards hold value like baseball cards? Because, you know, I remember growing up, I had football cards and I had some hockey cards and you know, I had all of them, but everybody seemed to focus mostly on baseball cards.
Generally speaking, the baseball cards have the most value, so number one, and then underneath would be football, and then basketball, and then hockey is like way on the floor. So 1, 2, 3, 4, as far as generally speaking, values as it relates strictly to cards.
And that's kind of almost how the sports are viewed anyway. You know, you could swap baseball and football.
Yeah.
What would be a valuable collectible for hockey fans? Because if you like cards, you say, eh, not really. We know the swag that it's given out, not too much. Is it a stick? Is it equipment? Is it, because a lot of it, like, I have a Jonathan Toews autographed jersey.
That's cool.
You know, but I wear it. So, you know.
I'll say, like a Bobby Hull rookie card, that's great. A Gordie Howe rookie card. Anything game used, a game used stick, a game used jersey by a Hockey Hall of Famer, like those are fantastic.
Okay.
Autographs, game used, like I said, from a Hall of Famer is usually, with hockey, command the most money.
How do we make sure that if I'm at an auction and I see, hey, I've got a game used Marian Hossa jersey. Now, Hossa, we know, just his contract was traded away. He won't, probably not playing hockey anymore due to illness. Marian Hossa, future Hall of Famer. I got to buy this game-used Hossa jersey. How do I know that it was really a game-used Hossa jersey?
So the answer in short is you really don't unless you have provenance that you believe. When I say provenance, maybe the auction house is dealing with Hossa's someone in his family who directly, you know, donated this jersey, right? But a lot of times people will... dealers or auction houses will make stuff up. This is how we got something. You really need to have ironclad provenance.
All right, Michael Osaki is here. BaseballInTheAttic.com is the website. The lines are jammed. 312-981-7200. We will get to your sports memorabilia on the other side of the news, which we will do in about 5 seconds here on WGN. No lunacy involved, but Michael Osaki is... what are you doing? Appraising your sports memorabilia. I just had a little mental downfall there. Michael's website is Baseball in the Attic. If you want to get a hold of Michael, if you have a piece of memorabilia and you don't get to talk to us today, by all means, they can go on the website and the contact information is right there, correct?
Yep. BaseballInTheAttic.com, or they can call me today after the show, 312-379-9090, or email me, michael@baseballinTheAttic.com.
We were talking real quick. We'll go to this text, and then we'll get right to the phones. We were talking about hockey right before the break, and you were talking about autographs and things like that. From the 708, I have an autograph from Bobby Hull. We met at the Illinois State Fair in Springfield. It was about 45 years ago. Would that be worth anything?
So Bobby Hull is still signing today, and
all
he
the
signs
time.
A lot all the time. His signature is not very valuable at all. Signed 8x10 is $40.
Okay, and that's just because there's so many signatures out there. It doesn't, and that's the thing. You've got athletes and legends who rarely sign, and so those are going to be worth a lot. And guys who, you know, you meet them and they'll sign just about anything. That's really cool. And you get a great story. You know, you met Bobby Hull at the state fair. That's cool.
Yeah.
But you're not going to cash in on that.
No, the same thing with Bob Feller. He signed millions of autographs over the course of his lifetime. When he passed away, he was a Hall of Famer, a great pitcher. Yeah. The value actually went down because there was everyone that ever wanted a Bob Feller autograph already had one.
Okay.
So when he died, all this came onto the marketplace. There was all this supply, but no demand.
No demand. Are these card shows, I'm guessing they're bad for people who want to collect memorabilia as an investment. Because these shows, unless you've got something from somebody from a long time ago, there's these guys out, like you say, signing all the time. So, you know, again, it's cool, but it's not going to make you any money.
Exactly. And a lot of the athletes today, like you think about Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, you're going to spend $250 for an autograph.
Ugh.
You know, so you should not be getting that for an investment purpose, right?
Because you're not going to get that back ever.
Right.
Correct? No matter how great a career these guys have, they've been signing for, by the time Bryant and Rizzo retire, or Abreu or any of these other guys, by the time they retire, there's going to be hundreds of thousands of autographs out there.
That's right. That's right. And they probably will be Hall of Famers. But again, in the examples I just gave, the Bob Feller, the Bobby Hull, you know, you can't buy something for $250 today and think it's going to be $500 in 10 years.
All right. 312-981-7200. Let's get to the phones. Jim's been hanging on. He is in Dyer, Indiana. Hi, Jim.
Hey, Brian. Great to talk to you. Enjoy your show.
Well,
wish you had more hours
that.
There, and thanks for having Michael on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Always fun when Michael's around. What do you got?
Former St. Karen alumni as well, 72.
Is that right? Good for you.
Yes.
All right.
Hey, years ago I went to a Bulls Pacer game down in Indianapolis, and that's when Michael came back out of retirement. So I have a T-shirt and that says I'm back and a ticket stub from the game. Just wondering if it's worth anything at all.
Yes. Some of those vintage T-shirts are actually not only back in style, but especially from that game. There are people, don't forget, Michael Jordan is God, right?
Right.
And so people will buy pretty much anything with Michael Jordan. And there are serious diehard MJ collectors that don't have everything. And if they don't have your shirt, someone would probably pay about $40 or $50 just for that shirt. Of course, it's unsigned, but still, $50 is pretty good.
Yeah.
A ticket stub is about the same.
$50 for the ticket stub. So, Jim, that sounds pretty good if you were looking to get
rid of it. Yeah, well, I'm not looking to sell. I just wondering what it's worth. But
well, that's cool.
Thanks so much.
You're
appreciate everything you guys do.
Thanks a lot,
thanks.
Jim. Ticket stubs, because I know friends of mine who save all their concert ticket stubs and things like that. Where does a value come in? Does it have to be for a specific game, like Michael Jordan's return? That game has some historic significance. But if it's just the next night's game, nobody cares, right?
Yeah, and this has been going on for a long time. Like, I have a lot of ticket stubs from the White Sox, 1963, but it's just a random game, and
maybe
they'll sell for a dollar or two apiece.
Okay.
Yeah, they have to be significant. Something happened in that game. You know, maybe it was a Game 7 walk-off home run, you know,
game.
Or maybe it was the first time the Beatles came to the U.S. and played, you know, some venue.
Yeah.
And so always be thinking about that.
Does it have to be a huge, like a Beatles thing or a Game 7? What if it's like, let's say we're there the day Mark Burley threw the perfect game. I've got that stub. Is that
that's great?
Could be worth something?
Definitely. And it could be someone that broke the home run record or stolen base or hit record.
So anything like that, a ticket stub is going to work. 312-981-7200. Jeff is in Chicago. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, listen, I went to school with Ernie Banks' two twin sons at St. Joe's Military Academy out in LaGrange for a couple of years, and Ernie used to come out there all the time, and he would autograph stuff for all of us kids, and I got two old baseball mitts. One is old Rawlings, red, white, and blue that he autographed, and then I think the other one is a Wilson AW2000. And his claim to fame back in the day was he would sign his name forward and backwards. All right? I'm just kind of wondering for insurance purposes if it's worth insuring or not.
Well, I'll tell you what they're worth. Each one is at least $200, maybe even pushing $250. So you're looking at $400 to $500 total.
Okay. Yeah. All right. That's nice. I'm getting, you know, hell, I know Ernie did a lot of signing. He always signed.
Yeah.
You know,
that's not bad for a couple baseball mitts.
Yeah.
Good deal.
I'm surprised my mom even saved them.
Well, thank you, Mom, and hang on to him. Thanks, Jeff. Have a good one. Let's say hi to Yellen in Mount Prospect. Hi, Yellen. Yellen. We'll put Yellen back on hold, and we'll go to Walt in West Chicago. Hi, Walt.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for getting me on.
Sure. What do you got?
Hello, Michael. Yeah, I've got a Roger Maris rookie ball when he was with Cleveland. I mean, his signature is very pronounced on the sweet spot. I mean, it's really clean. And it's got other guys that, you know, Pickard, Terp Score, Early Wynn, Eddie Stanky, Bobby Avila. But it's really clean. I took it to a show a few years ago, and one of the guys was very excited about it. And he said he'd give me $2,000 right off the top. I don't know what it might be worth now.
Yeah, so $2,000, I definitely would have accepted that. The issue is, a single sign Roger Maris ball is about $2,000, but it decreases the value to having those other athletes and signers on there. I know a lot of people think the opposite, where the more people, the better. But that's not always the case. Usually, that's never the case, and with the exception of a World Series team signed ball or Super Bowl team signed football. But Roger Maris, the superstar that he was, you really just want him single signed baseball.
Does it make any difference that it was his rookie year, perhaps?
Well, his signature was a little different in his rookie year, and that's important. I would say that definitely increases the value. But today, if someone offered you $2,000, I definitely would accept that for sure.
What would be more realistic in your estimation?
I would say between $1,250 and $1,500.
Well, it's still pretty good.
Yeah.
Could I ask another quick one?
Sure, go ahead.
I'm an old Sox fan, and I've got a 59 from the 59 team. Louis Aparicio, Nelly Fox is on there, El Lopez, but it's really faded. I mean, you can hardly make it out. And I don't know if it has any value at all. But
yeah, if you can hardly make it out, $50.
Yeah. All right, well, Walt, that's some good news on one, okay news on the other, I guess. Thanks for the call, Walt.
Well, thank you, Brian.
You're welcome. So let's revisit that, because people will go, more is always better. Oh, I got so many more. And really, like you said, it's the one or two. Now, what if, all right, Michael Jordan, obviously, if you have an autographed basketball, just Michael Jordan, that's one thing. What if I have it, Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen? They're, you know, they were basically a team, both All-Stars, both Hall of Famers. Now I've got two Hall of Famers from the same team. They won all those championships together. Does that increase or decrease?
It still decreases it.
Really?
Yeah, it still does. Even though,
killing me.
Even though, like you said, the Pippen is, yeah, he was a stud. He's an All-Star.
Yeah.
Hall of Famer, but, yeah.
No, so you always want, try to get the one. And before, because I'm sure we'll get some questions about this, but we'll get it out of the way. If something is personalized, that immediately drops the value, right?
Yeah, usually, for example, if someone personalized to Brian, unless my name is Brian also and I'm trying to buy it,
right,
then that may not decrease the value because we have the same name. But, yeah, anything to Bob, to John, to XYZ family,
yeah,
decreases the value.
Just hang on to it at that point.
It depends. Depends who signed it, but yeah.
All right, we got a lot of calls. We'll get to those. I want to do this one text question, then we got to take a quick break. I found a Titleist golf ball at a Harborside with MJ in red on one side and 23 on the other. I can't find that they have ever been mass produced. Just wondering if it could be one of Jordan's private golf balls. And if so, would that be worth anything?
It would be if it was his private golf ball. I just don't know. If you take a picture and email me, michael@baseballintheattic.com, I'll take a look.
All right. So that would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
So what would something, if it turns out that that's a thing, what would that be? Again, you said there's people who collect certain athletes, right?
Yeah.
So somebody might be willing to
It would be several hundreds of dollars.
Really? For a golf ball?
Yeah.
Man, I love this country. Michael Osakis here. BaseballInTheAttic.com is the website. We have a lot of calls. We will get to as many of them as we can as soon as we do this on WGN. Dave is in Brookfield. He's been hanging on. Hi, Dave. What do you got?
Hi, gentlemen. How you doing this
day? We're great.
Hi, Dave.
What do you got for us?
I got a couple of things, but the first thing is fairly unique. My late brother worked for the Blackhawks as a clubhouse man for many years. He collected a stick from every 50-goal scorer, all the way from Bernie Jeffron all the way up to Ovechkin. Almost all these are hand-taped, if you will, and signed, mostly game-used, but, you know, so they do show some wear. But it's fairly unique in its collection because it's fairly complete. I'm wondering how much those would all be worth.
That sounds pretty cool.
It is really cool and a great story. I definitely want to know more and see some pictures and see the condition and see all the tape marks. It sounds like you got several of them. So there's definitely going to be some value there. I just don't exactly know over the air, but if I see pictures, I'll be able to kind of hone in on it and figure it out.
But something's there.
Yeah, definitely.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, I thought it was unique with its collection because, I mean, you know, Gretzky sticks are out there in Ovechkin's, but who has, like, a Hock and Loop stick, if you know what I mean?
You're right.
Despite its collection. But I do have your email, Michael, and I'll get a couple.
Yeah, let him know, Dave. Yeah.
Thanks, Dave. I appreciate the call.
Thanks a lot. All right, and now we say hello to Robert in Elmwood Park. Robert, what do you got?
This is Robert.
Yes, sir. What do you got?
I have the newspapers from the 1985-1986 Bears Super Bowl.
Okay.
I've got them laminated, you know, this Tribune and all the Chicago Tribune papers. I laminated them as soon as they won. But more importantly, one of our branch offices was in Boston. I have the Boston papers.
Oh, talking about the Bears win and the Patriots loss.
Yeah, the Bears Super Bowl loss. Win. And the Boston papers are just hilarious.
So what do you think,
when
Michael?
When they lost, and I've got them laminated, and I think that some bar might be wanting to have these.
It's possible, yeah. Each paper, depending upon condition, anywhere from 20 to 50 bucks.
Not bad.
Not bad at all. He sounds like he's got several of them.
Yeah, Robert, maybe you start going around to these sports bars, see if you can work out a deal. So that's not too bad. Thanks for the call. Let's see. We'll say hi to, we'll try Yellen again. He's been hanging on. Yellen, you back?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, what do you got, Yellen?
Well, I had the papers from the 2016 Chicago Cub wins, from the Tribune, from the word-to-word play of each pitch, each player, each run, and John Lester winning the game with the last pitch. I'm wondering if that series of papers from the Chicago Tribune would be worth anything.
Yeah, because people get those newspapers after a big event. I still have, my mom still has one from the moon landing. You know, you keep them in a drawer somewhere and you think, this is going to be worth something someday. I still have the ones, unfortunately, from 9/11. Would the Cubs championship newspapers hold up?
Yeah, I still have several myself. They're selling right now on eBay for about $15.
Oh, all right, yelling a little money there. $15?
I was just curious because the papers itself, the issue of the special reports and everything, did run out.
Yeah.
So there wouldn't be any more available from now on. But I noticed, I'm just saying that you have your own issues, but people would not be able to get the originals.
Yeah, so it'd be, if somebody was looking to buy them, it'd be about $15. Thank you for the call. Let's see. I have a Stevie Ray Vaughan ticket stub. That's not the one I was looking for. And ticket stubs, from the show, his show back at University of Illinois. You would need, for something like that, and I know this is music, not sports, but you would need, like, the last show, right? Like, the if you had the ticket from the Alpine Valley show.
The last show or something, God forbid, if someone had a heart attack on stage and the show was canceled and the whole tour was canceled, you know, something significant.
Something big.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me see. There was, this was weird. This is a strange one. Something different than, and I want to see how your reaction to this. My aunt did all the eye exams for the Bears during the 80s. I have two 9.5 by 11 pieces of paper of the entire 1986 Chicago Bears, including Sweetness and Kevin Butler. So I don't know what's on the paper. Maybe the eye tests? He's got signed eye tests, or he's got the actual forms with their name on it, like this was the form for Walter Payton.
Yeah, it would be awesome if they were signed. But even so, if they were unsigned, there still would be a little demand for that. They're so unique and so different. 22 of them. He's got Sweetness. Obviously, that would be the key one there.
Yeah.
Sometimes with a unique one of a kind items, you just don't know what the value would be. Yeah. It really is what someone's going to pay for it.
Okay. Very interesting. Since we've been talking a lot about Michael Jordan, one last text. A Jordan signed jersey with a picture of him signing it to authenticate it. My son had it signed at a Jordan basketball camp at Elmhurst College in the late 80s or early 90s.
All right. I'll give you the value in just one second. But regarding the picture, it doesn't mean anything. It's not helpful because I've seen people before. Someone can mass produce 100 pictures for this and then just say, I have 100 signed Jordan jerseys. Here's 100 pictures. So it's not going to help.
Okay.
But an authentic signed Jordan jersey is about $1,000.
Really?
It could be worth a little bit more depending upon the color of the jersey, if there's any inscriptions, things like that.
Tell your kid to hang on to that jersey.
Yep.
Because are there some athletes who are immune from their signature being less? I'm guessing like Michael Jordan, or as you mentioned, Roger Maris, Mickey Mantle. There's some guys whose signatures are never going to go down in value.
Walter Payton.
Walter Payton is never going down in value. That's very cool. 312-981-7200. Terry is on the road. Hi, Terry.
Hi, guys. I've got something unique here. I've got a 1963 Western Open Golf Tournament program. I have it signed by about 35 golfers. Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, Ken Venturi, Julius Burros. This is when it was played out at the Beverly Country Club.
Wow.
And just wondering what it's worth.
Well, it's probably worth at least a couple $100. I know Palmer's signature is not valuable at all, but I'm guessing if there's 22 of them, if you send me a list, there's probably going to be a couple that are kind of rare, hopefully.
Okay, yeah. I think I've got 35 or 36 signatures.
Even better.
There were 72 players at that tournament, and I believe Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus and someone else were in a playoff, and it was won by Arnold Palmer that year.
Sounds very cool.
So, okay. Well,
right.
Thank you very
much.
Terry.
Thanks, Terry.
Now, we've talked a lot about baseball. We've talked football. I was mentioning because you told me you were down in Charlotte. And I jokingly said, you get a lot of NASCAR stuff down there? And you did. And somebody just texted in from the 815. Does Michael know NASCAR? I have a T-shirt that Ryan Newman was wearing when Tony Stewart grabbed him and signed his shirt. It's on YouTube with a letter of authorization from Newman's Foundation.
So the short answer is, I don't know. My expertise really is not NASCAR. It's
right.
Baseball, football, basketball, hockey, horse racing, some soccer. NASCAR, I just don't know. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But it's probably there. But there would be people who'd be able to give you that value, right? I'm sure there are people who appraise NASCAR things because there's got to be just as much NASCAR memorabilia as any other sport.
Yeah, it's
probably
huge.
More so than some.
That's huge, yeah.
So
NASCAR.
That's pretty cool. I recognize those names. I don't know what the T-shirt would have. I don't know where the T-shirt would have come into play, but that's very cool. Roger is in St. Charles. Hi, Roger.
Hey, how you doing, gentlemen?
Good.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Hey, this guy Mike, I swear, he should be on every other week or have his own show. I mean, he's so informative, and there's so many people, of course, that want to call. I mean,
well, then let's get to the
so
point, Roger. Let's figure out what do you got.
Who's your boss, Ryan? I'm going to talk to your boss.
Yeah. Well, my last name isn't Maris, but although we do share the same birthday, September 10th. All right, and so does Arnold Palmer. Anyway, I have a I had it folded up and put in one of my old high school yearbooks that I saved since I was a kid. I grew up near Wrigley Field, went to a lot of games, and I have the Chicago Tribune sports section from May 13th, 1970, the day after Ernie Banks hit his 500th home run. And over the years, you know, after I found it, about maybe 8 years ago, I had Ernie sign it.
maybe 10 years ago. And then there was a little section on the side that Ron Santos hit, and the 11th won the game, and I had him sign it also. I was wondering, what do you think something like that would be worth? I mean, I have it framed, but I haven't had it matted yet, which I want to do. But I did want to mat it because you wouldn't be able to pull the pages apart, but in case someone wanted to.
So what do you think, Michael? What do you think it's worth?
$250 to $300.
There you go.
That's it, really. I thought it would be I thought it would be more, but yeah, okay, I can go with that. What about a 69 baseball from the Chicago Cubs? Minus, of course, Leo DeRocher and Adolfo Phillips. Those are the two that I still don't have on that darn thing. And, of course, Leo, I won't be able to get him anyway.
You're not going to be able to get him anyway.
So if I recall correctly, Roger, about 12 or 13 years ago, the 69 Cubs did a reunion here in Chicago, and they signed about 1,000 items, baseballs, photos, bats. And I think today the value is not as much as it was back then. Probably for a signed baseball with at least 20 names on there, you're looking at least $500.
All right. That's a little better, Roger. Thank you for the call. Time always goes so fast when you are here, Michael. I see you gazing out at the skyline. Now I'm going to set you free to roam about the beautiful city. But people need to go to baseballintheattic.com. If you did not get through today, contact Michael through the website. You can talk to him. You can send him emails. Pictures are always very helpful to get a good appraisal.
Love pictures. You can call me right now, 312-379-9090.
Always a pleasure to see you. Thanks for coming
Thanks,
in. We'll
Brian.
See you probably when football season kicks off.
Sounds good.
All right, let's do it. Cody, do we have a break? We're just going right to the news. No, we're going right to the news. It's news time. Because from what I read on a certain garment, the best grandparent in the world is about to deliver the news. Some would argue that. You know, I think my grandparents were pretty top-notch. But, Roger's claiming he's the best. He's parading about in a beautiful blue T-shirt. We'll talk about that after. The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on tune in. The news is sponsored by NeverMeasure.com. Here he is. I'm in the presence of royalty. This is very exciting. The best grandparent in the world is here. Roger came in, but while I was talking to Michael Osaki, baseballintheattic.com, and was very excited to show off his T-shirt. Does it say best grandparent or best grandpa?
Best grandpa ever.
Best grandpa ever. Best grandpa ever.
Ever.
Ever is a long time.
Yes, it is.
Now, you're pretty braggadocious.
Yeah,
to go
well,
best grandpa.
I didn't say it.
Well, you're
My
wearing it.
My grandkids did.
There's a tacit endorsement that you agree with that.
I'm just proud of their work.
Now, first off, I'm not saying you're not, just to be clear, because
yes.
You know there are always people who say, why does it mean to Roger? How come you said he wasn't the best grandpa ever? Well, because, maybe I think my grandpa was the best grandpa ever. Maybe Cody thinks his grandpa was the best grandpa ever. You know, I'm sure your grandchildren do believe you're the best grandpa ever. Do they have other things to compare you to?
I think they do.
Do they have other grandpas running around?
No.
All right. So you're the only grandpa they know.
Well, they know of other grandfathers, but not theirs.
That's right. Well, good for you. Congratulations.
Yeah.
And why'd they give you that? Just for fun?
No, this was for my birthday,
okay.
And I kept forgetting to wear it. It was with my other birthday stash in a bag.
With your birthday suit?
No, I didn't wear a birthday suit. Oh, that's a good idea. I'll have to get one. But I kept forgetting to take it out of the bag and bring it in so that I knew I wanted to wear it on a given day.
Sure.
And so I finally remembered last night. I says, I want to wear this finally. And I thought, who better to wear it in front of than Brian Noonan?
Who would appreciate it more than me? Who would take it for the loving gesture it was from your grandchildren more than me? Nobody.
Hey.
Nobody.
Everybody in so far is it? Oh, that's cute.
It is sweet.
Yeah.
No, it is sweet.
But now talk about the extra special little touch that they threw in that even surprised me.
Yeah, where'd they find a microphone?
They made the shirt themselves at like one of these shirt making places, and they must have seen that.
Wait,
design.
do you have your grandchildren working in a sweatshop?
What kind of shirt making places are they?
But you said no. You said they made it themselves.
Well, like, you go into a shop and say, "I want that on. I want this on," and then the clerk will come over. Yeah, they still have those stores around.
See, that was a thing back when I was in like grade school. T-shirt shops. Remember,
yes.
You'd go and get. So that's it. So it does have the. It's got that look. The iron, the press-on appliques, I guess.
Yeah.
So they had a microphone at this store.
An old-fashioned microphone.
It's very cool.
Yeah.
And it's right above your heart.
Yes, it is.
Like they're speaking from your heart, or you speak from your heart. I don't know.
They know that I love it, and they know that I love them. And
well, that's no. So. It is very sweet,
yeah.
And it is nice. And someday, if I'm ever a grandpa, I'm hoping that I get one, and then we can have a best grandpa ever duel. And we'll see. We'll see who exactly will be the best grandpa ever.
You're on.
Cody, how you feel about your grandpa? You thought he was the best ever, didn't you?
Yeah.
Sure you did. Now Roger taking the title.
Yeah.
How do you feel about
it? Well, just while I'm wearing the shirt.
A lot of people claim a lot of things. It's like, still going to go to any random pizza joint on any street. Voted Chicago's best pizza.
Oh, there's a lot of best cup of world's best coffee.
Who voted these things? World's best coffee, world's best pizza.
Yeah, or best hot dog.
18 on the same block. Yeah.
City's number one sandwich.
Really?
Never been there, never heard of you. Number one, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Listen, Roger's t-shirt is what? It is nice, and I'm giving you a hard time.
Fine, but
it is sweet, and
I know you love,
I think
we love each other, and like you said, for people who are listening who don't understand us...
People who don't speak English?
They're complicated.
That's a lot of
people. Complicated relationship those two have.
Why is he so mean about the t-shirt? The t-shirt is beautiful. He should just embrace it. It's lovely amongst the children to give their grandfather a t-shirt. He's just the meanest man on the planet. I don't understand him. I wish I had a knob to turn this radio. I don't. I have buttons, and I don't know how to push them. I have a stick that I use sometimes to reach out, and I can't. My stick is very short.
It's a new voice. It's a new puppet.
Yeah,
it's a
really?
Whole weird thing.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't know. It just came. Call a priest quickly. This can't be. Nothing that happened in the last 15 seconds can be good. I would, if there's any, do you have any water? Come in here, do me a favor. You're a man of the cloth, Cody. You've been to church. Come in, bless this water, then throw it on me and see if it burns. Not you or me when the board shorts out and I catch on fire. Either way, something will be driven from my soul.
Can we name that character Banal Palomino?
What the heck?
Sure. If you'd like, the problem is I don't know if I could reproduce that puppet.
Well, he'll give you the recording and you practice.
Yeah, we haven't. Boy, oh boy,
you haven't done voices in ages.
I haven't. I don't know what it is. You know what it is? And I had this conversation. I've been reevaluating the whole premise of the program.
Okay,
I think I may turn into a right wing screamer.
Ooh.
Nice transition, Brian.
Yeah, might be the thing. Might be the way to go.
There you go.
I just start screaming about politics nonstop. That might help.
Okay, I think.
That sounds like fun.
No, I'm not. I can't. I tried. Remember, rest in peace, an old program director we had wanted us to do all sorts of. It was, you know, he may have been a wonderful man. He didn't. He was not well received here, and he wanted us to do all these really hardcore delivery and fulcrums and things. And I remember trying to do the overnight show. Do you remember the overnight show where I was angry about everything? And I screamed for like 4 hours or 5 hours. I was so exhausted at the end of that program. And my soul felt so empty that I thought, well, if this is what I have to do, I better get a regular job because this isn't going to work. And, you know, but. We all need jobs. You know who really needs a job? Teenagers. Teenagers in the summer. This is when, Roger, you were a teenager way back.
Yeah, vaguely
before
remember.
The turn of the century.
Sure.
Before they had t-shirts.
Right.
When everybody only wore burlap.
Yes.
That's all we wore.
Sackcloth.
Burlap sacks.
Yeah.
Sackcloth and ashes.
Yep.
And we were in a constant state of contrition. We
right.
were beating ourselves with barbed ropes
mm-hmm.
on our back.
We hung our heads low
always,
in reverence to the Almighty.
Oh, we never
yep.
looked up because
no.
that was a sign of pride, and it meant we would be slapped down.
Mm-hmm.
So you remember those days.
Yeah. Oh,
sure.
Vividly, sure.
What was your first summer job as a youngster?
Other than the cutting of the grass and stuff for the folks.
Yeah, home chores were not going to
count. Yeah, okay. I think the very, very first job I had was at the Dairy Queen on
Ooh.
Howard Street.
Ooh.
But when I worked there,
yeah.
he had gotten into a tiff with the franchisor, and they made him change the name to Dairy King. And then when he sold it a few years later, they gave him back the queen status to the new owner, and it's been Dairy Queen for above it. My brother and I both worked there. He worked there about 6 years before I did. So I guess I had an in.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure, somebody greased the wheels.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Yeah. Nothing and I got in
that.
And spent a whole summer, you know, making DQ ice cream sandwiches and chili dogs and ice cream cones.
Oh, you had a brazier at your Dairy Queen?
Well, it wasn't Braggart? Called brazier back then. We had was hot dogs. You could get it plain, you can get it with chili, you can get it with cheese, and that was it.
Our Dairy Queen had no hot foods.
Oh, really?
Just straight up DQ sweetness.
Mm.
I never worked there, thank God. I would have weighed, well, I don't think I could have weighed more than I did.
I did gain weight.
Of course you did. I worked at a Ben & Jerry's here. That statement should be followed by when I was 16, correct?
Yes.
No. I worked at a Ben & Jerry's when we moved as a grown adult to California, because I needed a job real quick.
Yeah.
Anyway, and, it's hard. If you work at a bakery or a Dairy Queen or a Ben & Jerry's, or I'm guessing a pizza place, let's say anywhere food related.
Right.
There's a good chance you're going to pack on some LBs. But the reason I bring this up, I got to ask Cody. Now, let me, hold on. Roger, did you work summers all the time when you were a kid?
Yeah. All right. Oh, yeah. All even right. Sometimes during breaks.
Okay. Well, see, there you go.
Vacations, yeah.
Cody, your first summer job as a youth?
Shipping department at my dad's office.
And okay.
Later, I was an intern, I think, the following summer for a graphic design agency in like Loves Park.
Was this in college or high school?
High school.
High school, you were an intern for a graphic design company.
Yeah, a friend of my dad ran the place, and they needed an intern, and I was like, all
perfect.
Right. Yeah, actually, I think there were a couple summers that took off in high school and college, but usually I had something locked in.
Well, the reason I ask is a study came out the other day, and this is the time of year that high school and college kids should be working, but high school kids are not. The number of teens working during their summer breaks has shrunk from about half to roughly a third since the start of the millennium. This is from a report released by the Pew Research Center. While working teenage population in the nation has grown since 2000, only about 5.7 million of their peers are in the labor force compared to 8.1 million in 2000. There are several reasons being speculated for this in the report. Summer breaks are shorter, with more schools ending in late June and starting up again before Labor Day, and that makes sense. More teens are taking summer school classes. Does that mean they have to because they're not doing well in school or because they want to? And an increasing number are performing unpaid community service work to fulfill high school graduation requirements or to enhance their college application forms, which was something we didn't have to worry about back in the day. And unpaid internships are consuming time many teens normally would be spending on summer jobs. Now, I know that was my daughter's case the last two summers while she was in college. She was not able to work because she was doing unpaid internships. But I'm wondering, 312-981-7200, are your kids working? Do you make your kids work? Or in this day and age, when we hear these kind of theories being floated about, is it more important for your high school rising junior or rising senior to be out doing things that will pad their resume, and you're willing to say, you know what, I'll foot the bill, I'll make sure you have spending money because I want you doing this that down the road will pay off? That's kind of how we looked at the internships for our daughter. It was, you know, would it be nice to come home in May and start making money till you go back to school in August? Sure it would. But is it going to help you in the long run to take this unpaid internship and get experience, get things on your resume that are going to help you get a job, which they ultimately ended up doing? You know, because I was one of those back, you know, Roger's a little bit older than me, but when we were coming up, you didn't have to worry about community service stuff really for your college applications.
No.
You were just, I remember, eighth grade, summer after eighth grade, 13, you started working. And I caddied for a number of years. Then when I was 16, that's when you could get a job, quote unquote. So I started working at a restaurant, and then I moved on to the elusive grocery store job, which was always good because you started as a bagger. Maybe you could move up to stocker. I stayed bagger. That was a good gig.
Okay.
And then in college, it was working on the loading docks or bouncing.
Oh, okay.
I've done it all. Because I'm big and I'm angry. So it was perfect.
Because you were stuck on the loading docks and as a bouncer.
I'll tell you what, I worked those loading docks for 2 summers. Oof. And that is work.
Yeah.
Those men work hard.
I remember one
of the first nights I was there, one of the older guys, and I was working the graveyard shift, so overnight. And there's nothing more, I was going to say upsetting or depressing, but for a guy, you know, but it was kind of beautiful in a way. Nothing better than watching the sun rise from a loading dock.
There you go.
It's a trucking company that's no longer there. But the first night I was there, he goes, what do you do? I said, I'm home from college. I go, you work here a while, you're never going to want to go back to college. I was like, dude, I've been here 28 minutes, and I can't wait to get back to college. You guys are working hard. And, I like working hard with my mind, which means sitting in a chair and cracking people up if I can, or standing on a stage. That doesn't mean actually, working. That's, man.
And you change from working hard
to hardly working.
No, to working smart. Come on, put it in the right context.
Yeah, listen.
You know what they say, you work smart, not hard.
Right.
Right?
Anybody who's listened to this show would argue the working smart part of the equation.
Yeah.
So are your kids working? Do you want them to work? We'll get into a few more stats on this. And if you want to share your first summer job, you've heard Rogers. He worked at the Dairy Queen. And why do I picture Roger like Homer Simpson laying right under the soft serve machine? Just,
a little spigot. Yeah.
And just doing the curly cue comes right out of your mouth. How long does it take to master that little curl at the top? Because that's a signature deal. You have to learn that, right?
Yeah, and there's a very, not only the curly cue, but the specific way that you would move the cup up and down while you were doing the soft serve. And then to time it perfectly to do the little curly cue. And I think I got that within maybe 15 minutes of practice.
If you were to go back now, if everything, let's say, God forbid, everything fell apart here at GN and you had to find another line of income, and you went back to the Dairy Queen.
Mm-hmm. Who says I haven't already?
Well, maybe I have.
I'm sorry, you were going to ask?
I was going to ask, could you still pull it off? Could you still make the nice...
Wow, that's been about 50 years.
Yeah. Muscle memory might kick in?
Yeah, it might after a few mistakes, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, you can always eat the mistakes.
Oh, who says I haven't?
Nothing wrong with that. 312-981-7200. We're talking teens working in the summer. We're talking your summer jobs. We're talking all about it. Where? Here, WGN. We're talking about summer jobs disappearing for young people. More and more young people not working. Increasingly, summer teen workers are punching time clocks in hotels and restaurants when they do get jobs. Hotel work, restaurant work, those are all fun. Well, we've all worked in restaurants. I worked at Long John Silver. Did you ever work in a restaurant, Cody?
Starbucks,
I guess, would count.
I didn't serve, but I was a barista there, and I was a ice cream, whatever fluffy title they gave us, ice cream connoisseur at Cold Stone Creamery.
An ice cream connoisseur.
Or something, they always have.
Sure, they are, because you had to do the whole big mixing on the actual Cold Stone.
I sang for tips.
Did you really?
Yep.
Did you ever make any?
Yeah. Yeah, really? We made really good tips, actually. It was in West Des Moines at the Valley West Mall, and there's a more semi-more upscale.
Yes, I've been to that Valley West Mall.
Yeah.
It's nice out there in West Des Moines.
It was a whole, when they built it, it's this giant sprawling... No, you know what it was? It was the Jordan... It was the Jordan Creek Town Center.
All right.
Which,
as long as it wasn't the Merle Hay Mall.
No, it wasn't the Merle Hay Mall.
The Merle Hay Mall is... That's the low... Wouldn't that be the low-end mall in Des Moines, the Merle Hay Mall?
Yeah, oh my God, yes!
Yes!
Oh, all these memories are flooding back.
Where'd you think I was just making that up?
No. Well, they built the Jordan Creek Town Center, and they opened it my sophomore or junior year, and I worked the opening day.
Wow.
And there were people on the TV news crying, because they're like, people say the Mall of America is in another state. This is my Mall of America. It was like the biggest thing that's ever happened in the Des Moines area.
Well, when those town centers opened, those were a big thing, because it wasn't just a mall. There was everything there, and you could wander around, and there was eating and shopping and, movies and Cold Stones.
It's massive. I was right outside the movie theater, actually. And, it's this huge, sprawling, it's like a small Las Vegas strip.
It's beautiful.
Where everything is thousands of feet apart, so you have to drive a car just to get from the Chili's parking lot to the Foot Locker next door.
the beauty of Des Moines. Real quick, William wanted to jump in on these summer jobs. Hey, William.
Hey, William from Geneva. How are y'all doing?
We are not nearly as excited as you are, William, and that's fantastic.
All right, here we go. Here we go. Ready?
Yeah.
First job, delivering the Long Island Press. Me and my buddies, we had the Long Island Press and Newsday covered in the neighborhood.
Nice.
Second job, after the family moved to Connecticut when my dad retired from the NYPD, he bought a bar, right?
Yep.
And, oh my goodness, the old man hired me out to some Irish painter named Tommy Hussey, right? I spent summers on a freaking ladder 30 feet high in the air painting houses for like three summers. Son of a gun. But you know what? And inside, too, in the winter. You know, to this day, though, you know what? I know how to paint a room.
There you go. See, and that's a skill that most of us don't have. William, thank you, one, for the call, two, for the energy. That you made my afternoon. I appreciate
it. One additional thing. One additional thing.
Yes, sir.
I'm retired.
Thank you, William. William, look at it. Listen to how happy William is. When was the last time we had a caller that happy, Cody?
I don't know. Here and there. But it's always good to hear.
It's always good to hear. Not since the guy went to the sport bar.
Oh, yeah. He was having a bar. He was at a sport bar.
Yeah, right.
He was having a drink at a bar.
He sounded all happy.
He did sound happy. I'm trying. Well, sure. No, I'm not saying William had been at a sport bar.
No, not at all.
But,
He sounded natural.
Well, he also had that East Coast, that accent.
Yeah, a little Long Island stuff.
Yeah,
because
watching the Hawks at a bar, at a sport bar.
Yeah, watching the Hawks at a bar, a sport bar. I miss this guy.
Watching the Hawks at a bar, at a sport bar.
I miss that guy at a sport bar. He was my friend.
Yeah.
I always enjoy when guys are at a bar.
Yeah.
What kind of bar? A sport bar.
There you go.
Of course. All right, listen. I think it's fine. The kids are not working. Anyway, so the percentage has dropped. That's it. Your kids are, don't call them lazy. They have other things to do. I was trying to think if there were any other summer jobs that I held a bunch. It seemed to have set a course for my life that I never really could hold one job.
But it was only for the summer, right, though. You had other things to do the rest of the year.
Right. Then you go back to high school. You go back to college, whatever you're going to do. And then you come out and you pick your career path.
I had newspaper delivery on the old bicycle.
I never did. I was never a newspaper, and I never have worked as a server in a restaurant. A lot of my friends have been waiters or waitresses. I've never done that.
I was a host.
Okay.
At three different Denny's.
Wow.
Yeah.
Look at you.
You could have moved up
to Capitol Grill to be like Maitre D' at Gibson's from that.
I could have. I was good at it. I should have gone a different career.
Yeah, how about it?
Yeah,
those guys at Gibson's and stuff. Guys have been there forever.
How soon would you like a table, sir?
I don't know.
Yeah,
very soon. All right, let's listen. You got to stop talking because we have to go to the news. You know what time it is.
I know what time it is.
Right, well, you could talk about Denny's or you could do the news. Which one are they paying you for? You want to do the news?
Yes.
Are you sure?
Yes, I am.
All right. Well, I'd love to have you do the news because it's 6:30 on 720 WGN, and that means it is time for the news. And in the newsroom, let me just say it one more time for those just joining us, the best grandpa ever, Roger Badish. Let's see. Oh, we're talking about summer jobs. I was trying to make sense of this text. In 1974 to 76, I worked in a gas station. When you pumped gas and checked oil and tire pressure, customers were surprised it was a girl doing it. I went on to be a police officer after graduating from college in 1980. That was also rare for a female at that time. Good for you, texter from the 815. Very cool. Yeah, we were talking about summer jobs and the lack of summer jobs for teenagers nowadays, or less teenagers working. The ones who are in like the restaurant, doing restaurant work because they're saying that the breaks are shorter, all different kinds of reasons. I almost had a run-in downstairs at the new building, and I'm wondering how you would react if you ever see somebody doing something and say something. Not to see something, say something that we're all worried about for terrorism and things like that. This is just when you see somebody violating either an ethical code or just something that is posted. So Have you walked outside this building, Cody, at all? No. You know, have you walked outside here? There's a fire station next door. No, oh, yeah, just south of the building.
Yeah, just south of the building. Cody's busy having his own show. He's too busy. Anyway, there's one of these, you know, all around town, they've got the horse statues. You know, different years they've had the fire hydrants, or they've had the cows.
I think this year it's lighthouses down Michigan Avenue.
Well, they also have some horses out from the Chicago police, the kind of a horse. Mm-hmm. So there's a horse right over here. It's either at the fire station right next door or the hotel next to that, the Aqua. Well, there's a beautiful horse, all decorated and things, and it's got, there's a big sign, don't climb on the horse.
Right.
So I'm walking by, and there's three women there, and these are not children. These are women in their 30s or above.
They can read.
They can read. Because you know how I know they can read?
Oh.
Because they were saying, you don't have to pay attention to that sign. Go ahead and hop up on that horse.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it would be like somebody climbing the Picasso. You're not supposed to.
Right.
Now, I've always been a guy, if it says don't walk on the grass, I try not to walk on the grass.
Mm-hmm.
If it says, post no bills, I don't post any bills.
Right.
Even though I have a lot of bills and a bucket of paste, I don't post them where it says not to post them. And there was a part of me that wanted to, I don't know why. I don't know why all of a sudden today I'm Mr. Busybody Gladys Kravitz, that I wanted to get involved in everybody's business. And yet, the oldest woman of the three was the one who said, I'll go ahead and climb up there. Nobody cares. I'm like, well, yeah, somebody cares. That's why they put the sign, don't climb on the horses. You jerk. I didn't. The payoff of the story is not great because I didn't go crazy on this woman. But again, what was I, if I had, nothing good would have come of it. You know, if you've ever approached somebody in public when they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, you were probably met with a less than courteous response.
Right.
And there's still a thing, still a feeling that a man should not get in a confrontation with a lady. Even if the ladies, and I'm using that term loosely, even if the horse vandals were definitely in the wrong and I was in the right, somehow I'm going to come off as the bad guy. So I let them go. I let the one climb up so they could get a picture on the horsey.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to go back.
Yeah.
Should I have gone back? No, I shouldn't have gone back. Well, I made the right call.
You sure?
Yeah. Because what's going to happen? I'm going to go and go, hey, get off the horse. Who are you?
Right.
I don't know. Just a guy who can read. Guy with a moral code. Moral compass. That's who I am, lady. Who are you? A scofflaw or an illiterate? Or a combination of both, an illiterate scofflaw. Either way, you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. I know you want to talk, but you can't figure out if you have the button correct or not.
I know the button.
Oh, you have the button now.
I know how to press the button. I was just saying, most people that aren't literate probably don't know what a scofflaw is.
Well, see, then maybe she wouldn't have been mad at me. Maybe she would have thought I was complimenting her. But rest assured, I would not have been complimenting her. I would have been deriding her.
Wow.
For being a person who puts themselves above the law.
Yeah.
Now, granted, I don't know if that's against the law.
It's not proper. Somebody bid a ton of money for that.
Yes.
Because after they were on exhibit, you could bid money and buy them.
Yes.
And it went to a good cause.
And it's right outside there, and it's a testament to the police horses.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful. Lighthouses are this year?
Yeah. Yeah, and they've had different things in the past. They had the horses one year. They had
the cows.
I think
were terrific.
They had the cows, right? Yeah,
they had
chairs.
Did they have chairs? They had all sorts of things. I love it. I love public arts.
Mm-hmm.
I remember being in Minneapolis when they did. It was Peanuts. All over the Twin Cities was Charles Schulz stuff.
Oh, really?
There was Charlie Brown and Lucy and Snoopy and all of them. They were everywhere. It's crazy. The town was sick with them. You couldn't swing a dead cartoon character without hitting a Peanuts character. And that's how I do. That's how I roll when I'm in the TC. I like to swing around dead comic book characters.
There you go.
Or just flop around. Boy, the mobs in Aurora were mad yesterday because they were at the Fox Valley Mall. They were protesting. They were all upset. I can't believe that this is still a thing. What year are we in, Cody? Sometimes I forget. Sometimes I'm on it. My calendar is, I forget to flip the page and I forget what year we're in.
The year of our Lord, 2018.
Anno Domini, 2018, you're telling me.
Yes.
All right, thank you. Shouldn't we now be used to women naturally feeding their children, aka breastfeeding? It should be fine, right? It's not the 50s where we view it as some, oh, this is something to be ashamed of. We should keep this over here. You do that at home, you keep your mouth, don't talk about it, never mention it again. Well, I guess, to some people, it's still the 50s. Thursday, Friday, happy days. Not at the Aurora, not at the Fox Valley Mall in Aurora. Keeping on our mall theme, I've been to the Fox Valley Mall, nice mall, very big, out in Aurora. You ever been there? Right out Route 53. Right off Route 53.
I can't say I've been there.
Check it out if you go to Aurora. You'll have fun. Right on the Aurora-Naperville border. Gorgeous. I don't know if it's gorgeous. I mean, I don't know if industrial strip can be described as gorgeous, but it's got a nice mall. Anyway, about 50 moms got all upset. They staged a peaceful protest at the mall Saturday in response to a recent incident centered on a breastfeeding mother. And again, I can't believe this is still a thing that somebody would be upset about a mom breastfeeding. Because, they just whip them out anywhere. Have you ever seen a woman actually breastfeed? First of all, they're not whipping them out anywhere. Most women I've seen are very, very discreet, where you would have to be looking for it to see what they were doing. But some people still upset. So it all here's when it started. During the most ill-conceived promotional retail event ever. Did you see this the other day with the Build-A-Bear? Oh, we're gonna, you pay your age.
Yeah.
Go to Build-A-Bear, pay your age. Sure. So everybody in the universe wanted to go to Build-A-Bear. And it turned into, I saw footage of women swearing at poor Build-A-Bear employees because they couldn't get in to get a bear for $3 for their kid. First of all, your kid doesn't need a $3 bear. If you hear this promotion is coming, oh, it's great, you can pay your age. You have to think to yourself, this is going to be a nightmare. I don't care how long my daughter had, and listen, we have plenty of Build-A-Bears. We had plenty of Build-A-Bears at home. I'm not against the store at all. I'm against people who are lining up for 17 hours to try to get a stuffed animal that they could get the next day. Yes, it would cost more, but you know what? Save up. Or tell your kid you don't need a new animal. So anyway, all these people are at malls all over the country. They're on Navy Pier. They had to, all the stores had to close because I don't know. Do you think the person at Build-A-Bear who came up with that promotion was fired the next day? Or was this the kind of publicity that Build-A-Bear needed? Kind of on par with this Sacha Baron Cohen show that is debuting tonight on Showtime that Sarah Palin has come out against, which could not be a better advertisement for this show. So now the more people complain about something, the better, the more well-received it's going to be.
It's the Streisand effect.
The Streisand
effect. Isn't it called the Streisand effect?
I don't know what that is.
I'll double check.
All right, double check that. But anyway, let's get back to the mom who confounded and was an affront to a security guard at the Fox Valley Mall. So because all these moms and dads were waiting with their kids in the line at Build-A-Bear, moms were taking turns going off to breastfeed their infants, and other moms would save their spot in line. Now, we could argue and debate the wisdom of taking an infant to stand in line for 6 hours for a teddy bear. But that's for another day. I think you know where I stand on that. Anyway, so this young mom is taking her child, a one-month-old son. One-month-old son. She brought a cover to cover up, but she had to feed the baby. The baby's got to eat, right? So the security guard, according to the mom, the security guard waited until I finished nursing and came up to stop another mom who was breastfeeding uncovered, and he was very rude, she said. No other parent or even dads had any problems. Kids were just running around playing as usual. Sure, because again, nobody sees it. It's not, I think it might be a puritanical thing where anytime we hear the word breast, we think, breast sex. Nothing to do with it. It couldn't be further removed from that. It's a natural thing that has to happen. Babies have to eat. Moms nurse babies. That's how it goes. You know, I have never seen a mom who was not discreet doing it. You know, as I said, you have to almost stumble upon it and go, what's going on? Oh, that's what's happening. All right, good for you, kid. Eat up. Well, the Fox Valley general manager said, given the long lines and crowds, the security officer approached the mother to make her aware of options to nurse in the family lounge at the shopping center. He said at no point was the mom asked to leave the property. The mall again said, we do not agree with the officer's decision to approach the mother, and his actions do not reflect the views of the shopping center. Well, that's all well and good, but the moms were still upset, and they went to the mall, which they should. Good. See, now, somebody had a good point on the texter. When's the last time you heard about Build-A-Bear classic publicity stunt? To be honest, I was in a Build-A-Bear when we were in Manhattan. Yes. Oh, are you shocked by that information, Cody the G?
Like a week ago?
Yes, a week ago.
That I am shocked by that information.
Well, here's why.
Because it was next to pizza, and that's where you ate all your eating.
I eat all my I went to Chili's, I went to a Bennigan's, and Pizza Hut. That's the only thing I ate in New York. And Taco Bell. That's all I ate. Chain restaurants. I stay with the chains because you know why? They're safe. I only order my pizza from Domino's, not Papa John's. Never. No, that's not true. But we were going by, and years ago, years and years ago, when Molly was, I don't know, first grade, kindergarten, something like that, I was on the road, and I had to miss a dance recital. And I felt horrible. So I went to a Build-A-Bear. Well, actually, it was a knockoff Build-A-Bear in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. They didn't have a Build-A-Bear. They had a, here, stitch up an animal. It's similar, yet different. And I went to this stitch up an animal joint, and I made her a monkey, because that was my nickname for her, and I put it in a ballerina outfit. Well, she, being a clever and creative young woman who hopes to write for late night television, named the monkey Molly. So, which is her name. But she's had this monkey, and for years, she took it to college with her. It was on her bed all the time. She's now the monkey lives in Brooklyn. And occasionally I would buy the monkey a new outfit. Like when Molly Monkey went to college, I got her a new pair of pajamas at Build-A-Bear. So we're walking down through Manhattan, and here's Build-A-Bear. My wife and I are commenting, oh, there's Build-A-Bear. And I was like, I got to get the monkey some new pajamas. So I went in, and here's me, aged old man who looks, you know, I was sweaty because it was 100 degrees, and I walk into Build-A-Bear, and it's filled with what you would expect, little children enjoying themselves. And there I am, thumbing through the animal pajamas. It had to appear creepier than it really was. It was sweet, in my estimation. But anyway, I found some nice New York pajamas. So now Molly Monkey has New York-centric pajamas as she sleeps in Brooklyn.
Is Molly Monkey not Monkey Molly?
No, it's Molly Monkey.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Molly Monkey.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I guess. It makes as much sense as anything else I've said. Right?
By the way, Streisand effect, I was right.
Yes, what is Streisand effect?
Yeah, it's a phenomenon where attempting to remove or hide or remove, censor a piece of information ends up publicizing it more widely. And it came from Barbara Streisand in 2003 when she tried to suppress photographs of her residence in Malibu.
Oh, right.
Apparently it drew a bunch of attention to it and all these cease and desist letters and all this other stuff. But instead of actually suppressing it, the information got extensive publicity and media extensions, and people were making videos and spoofs of it and all that. Probably similar to when Axl Rose tried to get rid of all the fat Axl photos.
Oh,
because I never would have heard of that. But yeah, you start to hide it.
Skinny Axl groupies who, you know, were disappointed later in life.
Sure.
That they had not, you know, they could no longer be with their thin idol. You know, now they're with fat Axl. All right, let's take a quick break. And then there is more as we begin to wrap things up here on WGN. I'm giving Kara Conte a hard time because she's trying to get into the studio where she's been off for a couple weeks. So she's antsy to get her show started. I don't blame her. Listen, we can take off early, can't we? If Karen wants to start early, should I let Karen come in? Now she's pretending she's ignoring me. Well, do me a favor. Because we don't have any break till the top of the hour, right?
No, we're going right to clear.
Yeah, tell Karen she can come in anytime.
All content all the time, Brian.
Is that right? All content all the time?
Less content right now.
Listen, I was at the zoo yet last night at Brookfield. Brookfield Zoo, very safe. I'm glad I was not in New Orleans at the zoo yesterday. You know my love for New Orleans. You know my love for Audubon Park and the Audubon Zoo until Saturday morning when an adult jaguar escaped. Yes, the adult jaguar, 3-year-old male jaguar named Valero. He was spotted outside his enclosure. He killed 6 other animals. Thank goodness no people were killed, but in the area he was kept in, where the jaguars are kept, they also kept the alpacas. There's like a pen for alpacas. And he got in and he went after the alpacas. He got them. 4 alpacas he killed, 1 emu and a fox. which is horrifying. So, you know, and I've been to this zoo. It's a beautiful zoo. They said there was something wrong with the roof of his enclosure. And he was able to, so they shut the zoo down yesterday, even though they had him, they tranquilized him, they caught him, they didn't have to put him down. Cause he was doing, I guess he was doing what a jaguar's supposed to do when it's out in the wild, which is eating other animals. But so that was that. They closed the zoo for one day. They reopened the zoo today so everybody can go around. So last night, as I mentioned, we're at the zoo. And, my wife actually walked up to somebody, a zoo employee, and said, "Oh, did you hear what happened in New Orleans today?" And he's like, "Oh, at the zoo?" And she's like, "Yeah, did you hear about the jaguar that got out?" And he was like, "Yeah, I heard about him. Don't worry, our zoo is much safer." So, you know, the guy outside the restrooms at Brookfield Zoo assured everybody that that zoo was much safer, which I'm, you know, but how many times you've been to the zoo, you always think that, what would happen if the animal got out? Well, now we know, thanks to Valero, the three-year-old jaguar. When an animal gets out, it does what animals do, which is eat other animals. Thankfully, nobody, no people were involved. I've been teasing Karen for the last half hour because she's so excited about getting back to work. She's missed her show so much over the past 2 weeks that she's been coming in here and just sitting in front of the microphones pretending she was doing her show a half hour early. Welcome back. Welcome back. Listen, I can go if you want to start early, if you feel the need to jump in.
I need the money, Brian. I need that extra 5 minutes of airtime. I really do. After all the money I spent on the trip.
They pay us by the minute here. People don't know that. People think, oh, radio, big time dollars.
That's right.
They pay us by the minute.
That's right.
So where did you go?
It was a very interesting trip. It was a cruise. I went to Russia, St. Petersburg, Russia, Copenhagen, Denmark, Helsinki, Finland, Stockholm, Sweden, and Berlin, Germany.
Wow.
And Estonia. I forgot Estonia.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
How'd you find Russia?
I thought St. Petersburg was one of the most beautiful cities I've ever seen. I was surprised. The people were a little stern, and I think they're a little oppressed, and I think they're a little upset with the way their government is working. But as far as just the beauty of the city, amazing place. Didn't have a lot of time in each city, understand?
Yeah.
So you didn't really get a chance. And you don't go wandering around Russia by yourself. That's just not something
you do.
Just
hop off the boat and scurry in to grab a bite?
No, but I did really enjoy Stockholm. It was one of the most beautiful cities I've ever seen, hands down.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely beautiful and clean and neat, and the people were wonderful and tall blonde people everywhere. It was fabulous.
It's very nice. And Helsinki, you said, and
also
Estonia.
Very nice.
That's
all,
very cool.
All
so
of it was great.
The whole thing was a cruise.
It was a cruise on the Baltic Sea. It was
very
a very
nice.
Big boat, and I'm not sure I'd cruise again. We're going to talk a little bit about the trip.
Yeah,
and,
I'll be interested to hear your thoughts on it. I've never have, and I've heard I have a reason why I haven't. I just don't think I would. It doesn't sound like something I would enjoy. But people love them.
And I came to it with that preconceived notion, and most of it was confirmed. But again, I know people love it, and it all depends on how you like to travel, which is a very personal thing.
Right. And I'm not trying to step on your, but a lot of buffet, that kind of thing. That's not how you operate.
Well, it's also like you're herded a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, so if there's an activity, it takes 2 hours because you've got thousands of people that need to get off the boat and get to the right buses. And I'm the kind of person that I like to navigate myself.
Yes. Okay.
You know?
See, that's how.
So that's what I find that as part of the challenge of traveling in a foreign country is to make my own money and go out and find my own places and take my own tours the way I want to do them.
Now, were there people, I'm guessing other people on the boat, other passengers from all over the world?
All over the world. That's cool.
When you were meeting these people and you would say, oh, we're from America. Was there, how are people from other parts of the world perceiving U.S. citizens now?
I think that people are staying away from the topic, generally speaking, because we're on the same boat.
Yeah,
we did get a few comments. I think people around the world don't understand what's going on. They don't understand the politics. I think they're concerned. I think some of them think it's funny.
Like it's
some sort of reality show.
Oh, it's not.
But we kind of stayed away from that, Brian, because it was nice to get away from politics and news for about 2 weeks.
Well, now you're back knee deep in it. I know you saw the. Have you watched the video of the shooting yesterday on the south side?
I did watch it.
Are you going to talk about that a little bit?
Maybe a little bit. Yeah.
Because I'll tell you what I think, and then if you want,
yes, please.
I think in this case, from what I saw in that video, this was a justified shooting. I know there have been times when the police have not, and that's what those body cameras are for. But I watched it and I went frame by frame by frame. This one to me seemed right by the book.
I agree with you generally. I think that, you know, when you are carrying a holster, or where, when you are going for your holster, you're going for, even if it's a cell phone, you've got to be very careful.
Right. But they had already identified that that was not a cell phone.
Well, right. Exactly. Exactly. I had a situation in the Gold Coast. I live in the Gold Coast. I saw the police were surrounding a group of kids, and one of the kids had a cell phone, and he was holding it like a gun. And I thought to myself, get away from here. This cop is going to shoot him because it looks like a gun. I mean, to me, when there are police officers, you've got to be respectful, and you've got to make sure that they know that you're safe.
Yeah, it just, and this will be debated for a while.
It will.
I know people are already, the social media is abuzz with, and so it's going to be one of those things. I'm sure they'll be talking about it for a while. Well, welcome back. We're glad you're here.
Thank you.
Two weeks,
Brian.
You're going to dust off the microphone here in the new another new studio.
Another new studio
for you. It's always fun. Have fun. Karen Conti,
right,
on the other side of the news. Thanks for listening and being part of the program. I will talk to you. Oh, we are not here next week because the baseball game is at 3 o'clock. So we'll talk to you. I'll talk to you when I talk to you. Talk to you soon. The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet. Weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. The news is sponsored by PermaSeal Basements. It is 7 o'clock. Here's Roger Badish.